Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn. Without further ado, here's Austin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. I don't even know what time it is because it is a podcast. So it could be with whoever we are with at whatever time. Today we're with Tony Way.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
You have an interesting story, a strange path through life that I think a lot of people are going to find compelling. We're going to start at right now.
Okay.
You renovate and flip homes, but you do it with an artistic flair. You actually turn a home into, you turn a house into a home. You're not doing the bones and the skeleton. You're actually turning a place that was iffy into a bespoke curated experience. Right?
Well, you make it sound so fancy.
Well, I've seen the photographs. And by the way, you're going to be looking at the photographs of what Tony has been doing on the Instagram page that probably drove you to this podcast in the first place. So It's really crazy because, you know, my brother's a contractor. He rebuilds homes.
Oh, wow.
But then he just selects fixtures. And then that's the end of it. Yeah. He's not doing colors. He's not doing art. And you're doing the whole experience.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I do real estate, home renovations, and interior design. But full disclosure, I don't have a real estate license. I don't have a contractor's license. And I definitely did not go to school for interior design. Sort of live by the old Hollywood motto of fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it. Yeah, right. So without getting into your legal issues, so you are purchasing homes that you've seen and you've got an eye for them, and you're like, this one, there's potential in this one. And now walk me through it. You find a home with a potential. Uh-huh. What's the criteria for that?
Well, location, location, location.
Okay.
Everybody always says that. But, you know, sometimes you're just priced out of the great locations. You have a fixed budget of how much you can spend on a particular home. You move forward based on that sort of price range. And then you obviously allot for some, back end, you know, for the actual renovation.
The expenses incurred, yep.
Exactly. Besides buying the home.
Yep. And then calculate the markup.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're walking through the home, I mean, you're sort of, I mean, this becomes a gut reaction type of thing. You're just feeling out what is at the bottom of this house in terms of what is the story that this house can tell you.
So give me an example. You just saw one that was a dud.
Uh-huh.
And you go into the next one, you go, ah, this is the one. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing when you walk through? Because I'm assuming you're seeing an empty home with...
Oh, sometimes it's not empty.
Oh, sometimes there's still stuff in it.
Or sometimes the homeowner's stuff is still in it.
Right.
Sometimes that clouds your judgment.
Because you see how someone else lived in it, and you're like, oh, this should be the living room. And you're like, should it?
Should it? Yeah. Or is it a drug den? I don't know.
Okay, so let's just say it's a bare-bones house, you know. Yeah. It's got the generic white or taupe-colored walls.
Oh, and the taupe from the early 2010s.
Yep. It's got that pottery barn color to it.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, it's got the iffy floor,
yeah.
But you see something great in it. Uh-huh. How do you see something great in what I would just see as, oh, it's a blank house and I'm going to put a couch in it.
Well, you sort of feel out the potential of the house. The potential, and here I'm going to talk about story again, the potential for a great story. Because, I should just say, you know, at the heart of design, home renovations, whatever, for me, I'm telling a story.
Right. And so when you see the potential in the story, let's tell why you see everything in stories, because you have an interesting background that brought you quite circuitously to home renovation and real estate, because you have a master's in film, correct?
I do. I have a MFA in film from Columbia University, putting that to good use.
Well, no, it seems like you are, because you're seeing everything as a narrative. So let's go with the translational facilities. I don't know. The translational qualities of, I've been schooled in narrative structure. Yeah. And you're picking up narrative structure and you're dropping it in an industry where narrative structure is really not a thing, but it is a thing because you're creating it that way.
Because design for me is visual storytelling. So, you know, I could just walk you through that. Let's start at the end and then we'll move on.
Yeah, backwards. That's how a great storyteller often writes, correct?
Sure.
I know how it's going to bang up. Yeah. How do I get there?
All right. So let's talk about this finished house. For me, when I'm looking at a house and I'm doing a top-to-bottom renovation, I look at it as a self-contained movie, for example, right? You know, and every movie has a clear beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yes.
You're walking through the house and you're going to particular rooms. I like to call them like the scenes in a movie, right?
Yeah.
And in every scene of the movie, there's the mise-en-scene. Right.
Yep.
Film technology.
Tell them.
Oh gosh, if I have to kind of articulate what mise-en-scene means, and my French is so terrible, is basically accumulation of the visual stuff, the visual goodies, you know, like the production design, the lighting, the way it's framed, you know, the vignette of the place, and also
it's the whole gut feeling of the cumulative aspect.
The swirl of visual sort of storytelling.
Yeah, you know it. You know it when you see it, because certain directors, you know, you can see the feeling of a Wes Anderson in just a quick shot. Yeah. You know, like just it flashes on the screen really quickly on a commercial. You go, that's Wes Anderson. Mm-hmm. How do you know it? Because of the mise-en-scene, you know?
Yes.
You know, like Kubrick, you know, boom, I got it.
Absolutely.
Spielberg, you might have to watch a little bit longer, but then you see the Spielberg move, and you're like, yes, I got it. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And you know what great filmmakers, great storytellers do is, you know, obviously we're talking about a particular scene or a particular room in the house, whatever. We equate that as a scene, right? What they do so well in terms of telling the story from beginning to middle and end is that there is a narrative arc, right?
Yes.
That you're traveling through, an emotional arc sometimes. You know, it takes you high, it takes you low.
Yeah,
and you're getting the feels.
Well, I hope you don't like put in like a shitty room in the middle of a house so you've got the climax when you get to the good room.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a great screenwriting professor once who always talks about the midway point of the movie, right?
Right. This the conflict.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know, this is also where like something magical or unexpected happens. Like,
right.
For example, in Harry Met Sally or whatever, they kiss at the top of whatever skyscraper. Where did they go? Were they in New York?
I haven't seen Harry. No, you're thinking
Sleepless in Seattle. Sorry.
Oh my God, wrong Meg Ryan, man. Yeah. I'm like, Harry Met Sally. In the middle of the movie, I think they were flashed back to college in the middle of the movie. Sleepless in Seattle.
They share a kiss at the midway point on top of a roof. Right?
Yeah.
It's a very... You're like sort of building up to that moment.
Right.
And the reason why the midway point... Oh, we're sort of jumping off topic.
No. There is no off topic, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going Tarantino on this, completely out of order, and then we'll put the story together afterwards.
Cool. Okay. Cool. Well, so you know, at the midway point, my professor always says that's an important point in the movie because that's usually where people start faltering, you know, in terms of their attention span, because things are dragging a little too long or things are, you know, taking a little too long to develop. And all of a sudden you have to like...
You've got a thunderclap.
Yeah, exactly. So the midway point is very important. But jumping back, I was saying, you know, all great filmmakers do this one thing, and it's so simple. And you know, I try to adhere to this sort of model in my home renovations and interior design is that there's always, you could have a great scene, you could have a wonderful scene, but if the scene itself is not in relation to the other scenes in the movie,
mm-hmm.
it's just crap. You're not really telling a story with an emotional arc.
Right. You just hit the nail on the head for once, but you didn't keep the whole narrative going.
Yeah. So you, and there's no connective tissue from scene to scene.
So let's go room to room. You know, let's walk through a virtual Tony Way home.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Well, let's start at the sidewalk.
Oh my God! Okay.
No, yeah, really. Okay. Like I'm sure this is innate to you. Like you already pre-visioned this. Thus, it's probably hard to talk about, but I think it'll be really cool for people to see, like, how one could visualize what's going to happen with a home from, you know, you're at the sidewalk. What do you want to see?
Okay. Well, I'll just use the last head-to-toe renovation that I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Spanish colonial home in L.A., in the neighborhood of Atwater Village. Let's see. So the previous owner... Well, she was 104 when she passed away. So,
what?
Yes, you know, she was a yoga instructor. So I guess the
maybe it works.
Yeah, the moral of this story is we should all do yoga. but that aside, you know, she was 104 when she passed away. So there was a lot of deferred maintenance to the house, right?
That was a very generous way.
Well, despite the fact that she was very agile, and she taught until her late 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, so she lived upstairs. She taught downstairs. It was an upstairs-downstairs duplex.
Got it.
And at that time, I actually happened to have lived next door. And not that I was counting down the days till she passed away, but, you know, like, she was 104, and, you know, and this is a little sad. She, you know, you can hear her at night, like, moaning in pain.
Oh, right? Man, that's tragic.
Yeah, and sometimes we would check in on her as she had a 24-hour home care nurse, and we would just check in, be like, hey, is she okay? Of course, you know, the 24-hour home care nurse spoke no English mm-hmm. at all. And despite having 6 years of studies in Spanish, I can
you
say
didn't,
barely
you, yeah,
anything.
You didn't get it either.
Yeah. So it was a lot of, you know, emotional gestures of, hey, you know, is she okay? Yeah, the okay sign.
Yeah.
But okay, so I just jumped totally off topic. But anyway, I guess we can start with...
I'll help you a little bit. In I'm a car nut.
Okay.
And there's something in the car world called parking lot presence, right? If you've got, you know, the beige jelly bean shaped SUV, mm-hmm. everyone's got the beige jelly bean shaped SUV. So if you're going to get an SUV, you want one with parking lot presence. It's got to be a different color, or it's a rare, more obscure brand, or it's something that, you know, from the lineup of all the beige cars, you can go at a distance, 100, you know, 100, 200 yards and go, I see my car from here, mm-hmm. parking lot presence. In the sea of beige, I've got that. I know that one's mine, right? So I think you're looking for parking lot presence in the home, right? You're going down the block and you go, I know that one's mine.
Yes and no.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to just counter that a little and say, you know, like, okay, so everybody always asks me, you know, like, what is your design, like, what is your go-to design style? And I always say, I don't have a particular style, you know, like, instead of my dictating what the style of the house, what the design should be, I allow
the house.
Yes. I let the house tell me what it should be.
Got
right?
it.
And one key thing that I always say to clients, and I do this when I'm renovating my own homes, is architectural integrity, right? I've lived in LA almost 10 years. I've seen some architectural Frankensteins of houses. It's just like a mishmash of things.
Right, because
like,
it was built in 1927.
Yeah,
and
then
someone threw something
bungalow.
On in 54.
Yeah, and then you threw something on in 54, and then something on in the 70s, and God forbid in the 80s. Oh, gosh, that's a terror. But, you know, throughout the decades and the generations, there's just been things that have been added on, things that have been deleted, and it becomes an architectural Frankenstein.
Right. And so, you might not, would you necessarily pass on one of those?
Not necessarily.
No, okay.
Yeah. you know, some of them have potential. I mean, especially when you sort of gauge the budget of how much it would be to restore the home. So, you know, like whenever I talk about home renovations and design and stuff like that, I never say I'm a flipper, because that to me just takes away the heart of the work.
You're a restorer.
Yeah.
You're paying homage.
That adds a little prestige to it.
But no, you're paying homage to the original intent of the home.
Yes.
And bringing it back to like it's
architectural and
character.
Integrity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You want to respect the integrity of the house,
right?
You know, in its original style. You also want to sort of respect the integrity of the community. So when you were talking about the parking lot, the car in the parking lot and how it stands out and stuff.
Might not want the bright red house. I see what you're saying.
Right. You want to be respectful to your community. You want to be a part of the community.
Cars move, houses don't.
location.
Yeah. So if you're the eyesore on the block, you're the dickhead.
That having said that, you know, that doesn't mean that you're sort of in design prison, you know, like there are certain sort of branches and tentacles that you can, you know, sort of, you know, add on, but respectfully.
Right.
So for example, this Spanish colonial house,
you know,
it's seen its ups and downs. It was built in 1931. It was two levels, upstairs, downstairs, duplex. But when it was first built, it was built as a single family home. Right. So the first thing I wanted to do was turn it back to a single family home. And the second thing I wanted to do was to sort of pare down certain things that have been added on to, especially this one in particular, I guess, had a lot of add-ons in the 70s. So there's a lot of shag carpeting.
Oh, wow.
And lots of color. So every single room of the house had a different color. It was just, you know, when you walked in, it's sort of like a visual assault on your eyes type of thing. So, you know, the second thing that I wanted to do was to tone it down, right? But having said that, what I always love doing is not only do I research the architectural history of the house, but I also like to pay homage to the previous owners who've lived there. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to celebrate the lives.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's also a part of, you know, like giving them a stamp of approval for, you know, thank you for having taken care of this house. Thank you for, you know, adding character to it, good or bad, you know, but you're acknowledging the fact that there were other people who were caretakers of this house, and that, you know, you're sort of taking the reins over or, you know, like
there's a sense of stewardship to
passing,
it.
Like a passing on type of thing, right?
Cause you know, I just drove by my family house that I, you know, we moved out of maybe 5-7 years ago, and I just drove by it in, Westchester in New York. Mm-hmm. And I go, like one of the barns, one of the walls fell off, and I'm like, oh, really? Come on. This is my childhood home, and you guys ain't doing it right.
Yeah, they're not paying homage to
No. So I innately appreciate that sort of philosophy. Like, because when the kids are 40 years old and they come by with their kids and go, this is where mommy and daddy grew up. Well, I hope they weren't living together when got married, because that would be... That would be, okay, let's...
Oh, wow. That's for another episode. I'm not an expert on that.
And nor are we in, I was going to say, Kentucky, the great state of Kentucky. Woo-hoo. I apologize immensely for that comment.
All right. So, you know, going back to the previous owner, I mean, she was 104. She moved in there with her husband in the late 60s, right?
Yeah.
So they've had a really lovely, long life there.
Yeah.
If my math, I know I'm Asian, I should be good at math, but what is that? Like almost 50 years, right?
It's 60 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I'm really bad at math.
Yeah. 55, 60 years, depending on when in the 50s or 60s it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, her husband had passed away earlier on, and you know, she was basically there by herself until she got older and she had home care nurses with her. But you know, the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to learn about her story. You mm-hmm. know, like, that was important to me,
right?
Paying homage to the previous owners. It turned out that she wrote, like, she published 7 or 8 books, and they were obviously hard to find because they're not in, they're not being made anymore. Or
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
But I found a couple in the basement.
Nice.
Yeah. So I totally read a few of them. 2 of them were like semi-autobiography. So yep. I learned about her.
Had a lot of ammunition to incorporate her story into the new home story.
Yeah, and I love doing research, you know, in terms of, I mean, I did this when I was trying to make a career in film and TV. You know, I did a lot of research. And I think jumping a little further back, the whole research component of I guess, my passion is I also used to be, I majored in neuroscience in mm-hmm. college. So again, I think I was talking to you before we came on about my circuitous route to here and, everywhere. Prior to all that, I was a neuroscience major. So research
is a big deal. The story is a big deal.
The story is
so
a
now,
big deal.
Okay. So what kind of elements of, this woman's life did you incorporate mm-hmm. into the home, and how did you stitch together your scene telling?
Sure. So she was half French, half Algerian. She grew up in Algiers. She was, I guess it was called a war bride. You know, she came to the States in World War II.
Oh, after she married. She met soldier. An American soldier and came with. Yeah.
Yeah, who was I guess stationed somewhere in North Africa.
Yep.
So they met, and then she came over here, and then it details a little later on, you know, her life and how she got into yoga, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I wanted to pay homage to her her origin story,
right?
So you know, I chose some tiles that were of, you know, like North African sort of decor styles that or colors that sort of adhere to sort of the Moroccan or Algerian sort of architecture,
white right.
stucco walls, you know, the tiled roofs and whatnot. And
the Spanish style mm-hmm. is Moorish influenced in the first
Absolutely.
Place.
So yeah, you've already got
right. due to the fact that the mission, was it mission style? Is that what it's called down here?
A Spanish colonial.
Spanish colonial. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Spanish colonial. Is that the same as mission style?
No, I think mission style is, I mean, they have similar elements, but the mission style was, I think it was a little more sprawling, and it was not as, so this one was like a two-story.
Right. Mission style,
I think it was.
Would be a one-story.
One-story spreading out, I guess.
But that's it. So even though it's Spanish colonial, it's still got, like, in its essence, sort of North African bones.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because there was some sort of dialogue, cultural dialogue between.
Yeah, it was from
Spain.
Yeah, it was from 7/11 to 1492. Not like anyone's counting.
Okay. Wow. I forget who I'm sitting next to. Okay. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, you know, that was sort of the icing on the cake, as they say, in that, you know, there was a Spanish colonial house, and I got to add sort of visual elements to it that were appropriate
right.
for the house.
You know? Now, when you're doing this and creating this story, do you have a specific client in mind? Like someone's looking for something, mm-hmm. or are you more speculative, or is it both or neither?
Yeah, great question. It depends on who the client is, but you know, for this particular house, I knew that I wanted to move into it. So a lot of times when I buy investment properties, mm-hmm. I would physically move into it mm-hmm. and sit on it for a good 2 years.
Yeah,
that allows me the tax breaks.
Yeah,
when I go to sell. So
and you add another notch into the story too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You mean like in terms of my own story?
No, in terms of one, your own story, uh-huh. and two, in terms of the story of the home. Because when the buyer comes to go see it, you're like, let me tell you how I built this home.
Oh, yeah. There's always, everybody loves a good story, right?
Right.
And whether you're telling the story through the actual house or you're telling the story through your own lived experiences in the house, I mean, you know, you're sort of the face.
I mean, that in my mind, like, would it, if I'm not buying the house market right now, but if I went in and I met you and you're like, well, let me tell you how I built this house. You built it? Yeah. Well, here's what I did. What? And here's the woman beforehand. I'll be like, this guy's really cool. I think I want to live here, you know, rather than just like, you know, the broker walks in and it's like, yeah, it's got a kitchen somewhere. Apparently the broker's from Brooklyn in 1952.
She sounds like, remember on Friends, Joey had an agent?
Yes.
Like a change.
Yes.
Like,
hey. I'll get you the pot. Just shut up.
Just hold on a minute.
No, so that would actually, you know, you could probably tack.
Are we going to get hate mail from people from Brooklyn?
Okay, wait, we could stop that. Brooklyn blows. Okay, no. There we go.
I used to be from Brooklyn.
Hey, I live in Manhattan, so Brooklyn is a suburb of Manhattan, and it's where people go with no
white.
No, it's where people go if they don't have any better ideas.
No.
I'm going to move to Brooklyn. You're literally from Eugene, Oregon. Okay, Kentucky, Eugene, Oregon, and Brooklyn. Check them off the list.
All right, so hate mail from all of that.
No, but back to the story. Yeah. It sounds sort of like if I were the seller and I come in and you tell me this story and also why you lived here and blah, 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 I'd be like, and you're like, and by the way, here's the asking price. I'd be like, yep, that's fair. I don't think I'm going to haggle with this. I'm sure people are always haggling.
Sure.
But I you maybe could start the bar a little higher because sure. You're like, this has the character and the lived-in nature and the story and stuff. And like if I was coming with like a young family or a young wife or something like that, I'd be like,
a young wife, full stop.
Sure. Okay. Wow, we are off the chains.
Wow.
Now, wait, are you interviewing me now?
Ooh.
I am so lonely.
Jedi mind
you. No, I would be like, honey, wow, isn't this a great story? And we can continue on this story, right? Mm-hmm. I think I see value in that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you can also add in your own elements later on, right? So jumping back to the continued you know, sort of celebration of past lives lived there, you know, there was, okay, so I was, you walk into the kitchen and the kitchen is just completely blue, head to toe blue. The cabinets are blue. The countertops are blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the walls, whatever, everything is blue.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And it's a very particular blue that you only see in sort of beachside Mediterranean cities.
I think I'm picturing the blue, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was a definite design choice by the previous owners, you know, this particular blue. And I didn't want to knock it, but there was a lot of it, right?
Right.
So what I ended up doing was scaling it all back. I think in design, and I think in life too, everything in moderation, right? Who said that, Ben Franklin?
I don't know, but I do not adhere to that whatsoever. There's zero moderation.
Okay. Well, I think you reach a certain point in your life and you're like, I gotta start moderating.
I have yet to reach that threshold.
Good for you. You have good stamina.
Oh, God. So you pare it down.
So you pare it down.
The blue was there for a purpose.
The blue was there for a purpose.
Some of the blue.
Yeah, some of the blue. It was a definite design choice
right.
by somebody else.
Right.
Not my choice, but you want to celebrate their choice.
Right. right?
The good, the bad, and the really ugly.
Right.
And so what I ended up doing was, for the backsplash of the kitchen, I specifically chose a sort of blue that had that type of, you know, shade to
yeah.
it as my homage to the previous owner
right.
So in their life and I guess their cultural sort of heritage.
Yeah, yeah, because people see things differently and you're like, I don't actually see it like this, but they did and I appreciate yeah. that. Yeah. Now you've gone through colors, mm-hmm. the bones of the house are solid, you know, it's structurally, it's fine and blah, 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 blah. I hear that you are a champion dumpster diver.
I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am a champion thrift shopper.
Awesome.
I never spend more than $7 on a shirt. And as everyone knows, I only wear like the same checked shirt. So I go to
I see it right now.
I know.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. This was like $4.50. I go to the same Goodwill on 88th and 2nd Avenue. And I go in and I buy 15 shirts at a time. I just go... I choose them by what color I like and if they're checked or not.
And only if they're checked.
Nah, if they got dots, that's okay. But no, just stripes. Stripes
no
are
terrible.
I'm a paisley. But like yours, like dots. I've got a couple shirts that have dots and cool. stuff. But I just grab like 15 of them and I don't even try them on because I buy them by size. And, you know, 13 or 12 of them will fit and I'll return the other three. So I consider myself a champion thrift shopper yeah. in that it's quantity works
uh-huh.
because if you throw 15 of one thing against the wall, 10 of them will stick, and that's a win. is that sort of your philosophy on dumpster diving?
Oh gosh, I think I'm a little more choosy.
Right? Are you looking? What I'm saying is, are you collecting a lot of objects and finding use for them later, or are you saying I want this object and I'm going to find it?
No, I'm always just scouring dumpsters.
Got it.
So master dumpster diver for sure. You know, I also, you know, I love doing the flea markets.
Yeah.
And just picking up roadside trash and stuff like that. And basically, I think at the heart of it, I just like breathing new life to old things. Like, I appreciate the vintage quality of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's trash could be, you know, my treasure.
Right.
Or the next homeowner's treasure or whatever. But I usually try to incorporate it in an install of a house. And if I can't, I'm also a sort of a connoisseur in all things yard sale related.
Yep.
And when I say yard sale, I also mean 2018's version of yard sale, like going online and using apps to sell
right,
stuff.
Right,
as
right.
opposed to having a physical yard sale.
Right. right?
So, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. You know, we grew up in Jersey, single mom. She worked three jobs. And, you know, the sort of tiny house that we rented, all the furniture that we had were, you know, roadside pickups,
mm-hmm.
You know, scouring the yard sales in the neighborhood, and yes, the occasional dumpster dive. And because I was always sort of artsy, you know, even back then, it was my job to rehab the treasures or slash trash that we found,
right.
And to breathe new life into them and make it wholly, you know, like our own. You know?
So let's decorate a room with found items. You know, what are you looking for? Do you know it when you see it? You're like, I know where this should go and what room it should be in.
Yeah.
Or is it like, I'm giving the building blocks and then I'm going to assemble it from, what's the process?
Okay, sure. I mean, the first good thing you got to always remember when dumpster diving or doing roadside pickups and stuff like that is it needs to be structurally sound. The whatever, the chair or the coffee table or whatever, it can't be like falling apart because also time is money, right? You don't want to spend like a gazillion hours trying to, like, you know, install a new leg onto a broken coffee table, you know, because it was termite ridden or whatever. So you look for something
okay.
that is structurally
yep.
sound.
Yep.
Maybe, you know, like if it was a sofa, it had really tacky, you know, upholstery from the 70s or whatever. I have a phobia for some reason of suede. I don't know why.
It's sort of weird.
Oh, I do remember why, but I tried to not remember. You know how, like, you have traumas in your childhood and you're like...
No, mine was perfect.
Oh, great.
No, I'm just joking. I was beat up all the time.
Oh. Well, so I think one point, I think we were in middle school. I was in middle school and we had picked up this... Oh, God. I don't know what the design was. I would say log cabin chic.
Okay, yeah.
Minus the chic. but it had some really nasty... It was trying to be suede, but it was definitely synthetic.
Oh, like so ultra suede, I think it's called, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. I think that was the term for it. It still is, sadly. But... I don't know. I think we were going through. I mean, you're in middle school. You're going through a lot of shit. Can we curse on?
We can. We just won't talk about it.
Sorry. yeah, but you know, you're in middle school. You're going through a lot of crap. You're dealing with stuff, right? And added to that, you know, we were struggling for money, and so all of that added on was like a psychic trauma. And then you go and pick up this like crappy, you know, like log cabin chic sofa, and you put it in your family den. And I just remember, I'd rather just sit on our floor than
sit on
the sofa.
And all that bad feeling is associated with the micro suede. Yeah. Micro suede, is that what it is? Micro suede or ultra suede? Whatever. That material.
Yeah.
Wait, how did we get here?
Oh, I don't know.
Where were we going?
Dumpster diving.
Yeah.
We were dumpster diving.
We were dumpster diving, okay. Yeah. So now you're assembling a room and you're creating your scene, you know?
Yeah.
What was it? You're looking, okay, oh, good bones. It's got to have good bones. Yeah. It's got to be structurally sound.
To have good bones, you know? Oh, we were talking about ugly upholstery, right? So, oh, God,
yes.
Yeah. So, you know, that's easily changed. You know, you could do it yourself.
Oh, good bones, good. Mm-hmm. Ugly upholstery. Fine, fix it.
It's like a cosmetic thing. Yeah. And, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a plastic surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Again, circuitous route to certain things in life. But, you know, like, I wanted to be a plastic surgeon. Not that I wanted to give people fake boobs or can I say boobs? Yeah.
Yeah, you could say boobs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that
boobs.
I wanted... Boobs. not interested. So
you don't say. reconstructive surgery is plastic surgery as well. So you
but
are
for some reason, yeah. You know, I was always good in school, and for some reason I was, you know, you grow up in an Asian household. I'm Chinese, from Taiwan, and you know, you're just born with certain expectations that you're going to be a doctor.
Right.
And, you know, I was good in school. So, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course I'm going to be a doctor. But what kind of doctor can fulfill my artistic sort of passions?
Other than a reconstructive surgery.
Sure. Yeah. Because you're working on a human...
This happens often on this program where, like, you know... No, this is a good thing where we've got... It's sort of a way to like give hope to people like that where you are right now is not necessarily where you're going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not actually be a doctor, but that passion can translate into you might not actually be a filmmaker, but that experience can translate into your life experience. And I like that sort of your fulfilling, interesting story on that, because here is all this life experience that it's like it's like Slumdog Millionaire, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like at the end, they're like, how did you know all of these things? Because you shouldn't, because you're just the kid from the slums. And he goes, well, here's what happened in my life. You go, oh, well, that's why he would know those things.
Yeah.
What advice can you give for someone who wants to go into this? Because you're not a flipper. You're more than that. You've got more artistic integrity than that. What if someone thinks they've got this itch to scratch? What advice can you give to them to get started? Or if they're in the beginning stages of it, what can you give to them to excel at it and move to the next level?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, and I've never really thought about it. I mean, certainly not for myself, because it was just like a circuitous route to getting here. But I mean, I can only say it through my own experiences. It's just storytelling, right?
Right.
You know, and you're scratching an itch for yourself. Are you for example, do you want to tell stories, or are you more into like the visual stimulations of stuff, or are you like very handy? You know, like
I'm semi-handy.
You know, I don't have a contractor's license, but I know stuff.
Right.
Right. So are you getting into it because you're a good craftsman? You know, like you did really well in wood making in
or
woodworking.
You don't actually make the wood. That's made for you.
Oh yes.
They're called trees. Yeah. okay, so yeah, there's a whole bunch of avenues into sort of building, rebuilding, and forging new homes. Like if you are the handy guy, well, maybe that bad table's not a bad idea. I can actually fix it quick and easy, right? Mm-hmm. So what advice would you have for a newcomer who's going your route? Who's going, I want to visually recreate this home.
Mm-hmm. You look at multiple filmmakers, like an Ang Lee is very different from a Tarantino, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they're both tremendous storytellers, you know, in their own way. One hits the emotions, the other hits, you know, like the blood. I don't know.
Right.
You know, like it gets your it gives you the tingles or whatever. I think like filmmakers, every designer is different, right? You know, I was saying prior, you know, I don't have a particular design style, right?
Right.
I let the house tell me what it is.
Right.
But certain people are very, you know, design oriented in terms of I only do mid-century modern, or I am boho chic,
right?
Or whatever else. I love, you know, log cabins. We were talking about log cabins. You know, so it's all very different. I mean, I guess the only way I can sort of translate answer your question is maybe talk about how I got into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I was just thinking on the way here, I was like, how the hell did I find myself?
And how the hell does anyone find themselves where they are?
Yeah.
And then you think of it, and you're like, how the hell did you find yourself here? I'm like, how did I find myself here? Oh, I won a game show. All right, there we go.
Yes.
That's the end of that story.
How much did you make?
$463,000. Yeah.
Should we buy a house?
You'd be surprised how little $463,000 ends up actually being. Uncle Sam in the great state of California, backed up with the fine state, the Empire State of New York. They all took their share.
This guy's a smarty pants. We're gonna take some stuff from him.
and the letters keep coming and coming and coming. So not really in the house buying territory right now.
All right.
But let's see. Let's see what tomorrow brings.
Oh, sure. Tomorrow is always a better day. Yeah. I mean, like, so for me, like how I got into real estate, and you know, because I obviously do home renovations and interior design, but part of that is also real estate, you know, like looking for a house as a good investment or just, you know, like looking for a house as a great project to fix up. You know, sometimes you want to scratch your financial itch. Sometimes you want to scratch your designer's itch.
Okay.
You know, so it's a different thing, depending on time, the economy, your economy,
yep,
sort of the itches that are needing to be scratched. But
so what was the time where you're just like, oh, is this actually what I'm doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, so I was on my way here. I was like, how the hell did I find myself here? And I was running in my mind about the various sort of lived experiences that I've had, you know, dreams that I've had throughout the decades and whatnot, you know, going to film school, wanting to be a filmmaker, wanting to write for TV, or going further back, wanting to go to medical school, wanting to be a plastic surgeon, whatever, you know, like all these things. I was like, where did it all start? And I suddenly remembered that it started with my mom, and it started with my sort of upbringing in the Jersey Shore. So I remember, you know, I was saying that my mom and I, we didn't have a lot of money back then. And, you know, she was a single mom. She worked three jobs. And on the very rare occasion that she would have time off, one of our favorite pastimes was to ride our bikes to the wealthy subdivisions and tour their model homes, right?
Right.
We would, you know, like sit in their dining room, put our feet up, you know, in their living room, sitting on their sofa and stuff like that. But, you know, I guess thinking back, like, it was all fake furniture, you know, it was a model home.
Right.
And it was all pretty tacky, crappy stuff.
Right. I mean,
this was suburban New Jersey, after all, right? And also in the 90s. So it's just a lot of design faux pas going on.
A lot of black lacquer then.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, right? God, yes.
Black lacquer chairs with white cushions, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Sometimes the white leather.
Yeah, there were some friends' houses who looked like that.
Oh, wow.
Like the house in Beetlejuice, right? Right? When they redo the house in Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Or, oh, I was thinking Goodfellas.
Yeah.
When Henry Hill.
Yeah, when he gets the tract mansion with his
So we were sitting on all of that in the model homes, and we were like, you know, like, yeah, it was crappy, but you know, to us it was like being in heaven, you know, because
this is how the other half lives.
Is how the other half lives. And you know, just for that like rarest and briefest moment, we just let ourselves escape and just, you know, like imagine what it would feel like to one day own our own homes, right? And through that, and through all the various cities that I lived in, I never forgot that childhood dream that I had with my mom.
Of, yeah,
you know, sitting in a model home and just imagining home ownership, right? I know that sounds really dull, home ownership. Like,
no,
we're
grown adults.
Or whatever.
You know, it depends what, you know, what levels of, you know, wealth or not wealth you were in. I mean, that's something that I'm sure crosses many people's minds.
Yeah.
Mine was more like I wanted to be a dinosaur or something like that.
Great.
But
metamorphosis.
No, I didn't.
Did that?
No, it didn't work.
Not
it didn't work.
Okay. Would you be a vegetarian dinosaur?
Oh, I'm probably fat enough to be one of those ones, because they were the big fat ones, weren't
they? Were they slothful?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they ate a lot, continuously ate, and didn't really work out.
No, that's...
Not like a T-Rex going, with its small little claws.
What the hell are we fucking talking about here?
so going back, open houses. So, okay, so we're touring model homes when I was a kid, right? And it sort of ended up being a thing that I did regardless of what city I lived in, whether it was Providence or New York or LA wherever else, you know, like I always made sure to go to open houses, and especially here in LA, because, you know, I was an East Coast boy, you know, growing up in New Jersey, going to school in New York and Providence and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, you know, I packed everything up and moved west to pursue my dreams in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, look how that turned
out. Well, apparently it turned out great.
Okay, yes.
So let's talk about your very first property.
Okay.
The very first one. Oh. And what can people learn from your mistakes from the first one? What did you do right? Oh, what did you do wrong?
What did I do right? What did I do wrong? Well, my first property that I renovated, the one thing that I did wrong was I let the contractor tell me what the it design trend is for the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, this is just very subtle, but at that time it was these accent strips that go along your backsplash and also along your shower walls and stuff. Accent strips.
Yeah.
We'll just say accent strips. They're just like little tiles that are different from the majority
the bulk
tiles.
Of the tile. Yeah, I'm familiar with that, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so...
Is that not a good trend?
I mean, here's the thing. Everything is subjective, right?
Uh-huh.
What we're talking about in terms of design, it's all subjective.
But this looks... does this look dated right
but
now?
But it looks dated, right?
Yeah.
Because if you see an accent strip, you're like, okay, this house was renovated in 2011 or 2012, and maybe pushing on 2013. If it was, then that means I was an Orange County developer who came and renovated their house. So I always look at those things in terms of, oh, when was the last time this house was renovated? But, you know, and not to knock the accent strip. I mean, I fell for it when mm-hmm. in 2011 doing my first home. Mm-hmm. I put it in the backsplash and some other places, and it was fine. It's still no, it doesn't hold up. but you know, I think what I'm trying to get at is I let somebody else tell me what the design should be instead
right.
of feeling it in my gut of what is the story I wanted to tell. Also, this house, as cute as it was, you know, I didn't follow my motto, which is about architectural integrity mm-hmm. and stuff like that of you know, the origins of the house. I think it was a house built in the late 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
In West Hollywood.
That's quite old for out here.
Yeah, and back then they were all Spanish bungalows, and mm-hmm. this was a Spanish bungalow. But sometime throughout the decades, it became a Cape Cod house.
Really?
Basically, like they took away a lot of the Spanish elements
and
of the house
and put on shingles. the shingles yeah. and like the distressed cedar walls and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, which looked good, I guess.
But
I
mean, it doesn't look good here.
But it
makes no sense in Los Angeles,
right?
It does in like Rowayton, Connecticut.
Sure,
but,
I love that.
Yeah, shout out to Rowayton.
Woohoo! Oh, so are we going to get followers from there?
I have at least one from there.
So, great. So that will cancel out all the hate mail that we
yeah,
have from...
Yeah, the one follower
Kentucky,
from Rowayton,
Brooklyn,
Connecticut.
Wherever else. Oh, in Orange County. I just hated on everybody in Orange County. Ah, deep breath.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Was the mistake the property full stop?
No.
Okay.
Because that property, I bought that and I was able to renovate it. I sat on it for a good 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And then.
What was your return percentage wise?
What was my return percentage wise? I don't know. But when it came time to sell, I knew I wanted to turn that one house into two.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Exactly what I did.
What?
Yeah. I mean, but it's also timing. I think part of real estate is timing, you know, like. I bought in 2011.
Right.
It was my first house that I renovated.
Which was right after the trough,
yeah.
right?
the trough.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, the speed bump or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So I bought it and, okay, well, so nowadays, if any of your listeners are looking at homes and making offers on homes, especially here in LA, you know that houses are going $100,000 over asking, $200,000 over asking.
Oh, is it crazy right now?
Yeah, because you're making offers. I mean, in order to compete, first of all, you got to compete with all cash apparently nowadays too. But on top of all that, you're making offers that are 100, 200 over the list price, right? Back then, after, you know, like the recession and stuff like that, or during the recession, people who were lucky enough to buy houses or to make offers on houses, you were making offers below asking.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't competing with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one house that I got, you know, my first house, I think it sat on the market for a good year before I came along. You know, so like, yeah, I made some weird design choices. I let people sort of dictate what to do instead of sort of following my own gut instincts. But 2-3 years later, I mean, I think the month after I bought, I saw the value of the house start to rise. And of course that was, you know, like Zillow came along and you could like check in an amateur's way.
See what my neighbors are at.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. What's my house worth these days and stuff like that. And I just saw, you know, the prices going up and up and up. And here going back to, you know, my sort of childhood hobby of with my mom of going to open houses. When I first moved to LA, I made sure to go to all the open houses in whatever neighborhood because LA is so sprawling and
yep.
there's so many different neighborhoods that really look like their own towns, you know?
Oh, no, that's, right? Yeah, that's exactly what LA feels like. It feels like not a city, but a bunch of towns with main streets
yeah.
and a suburb and then another town next
yeah,
door. Yeah,
absolutely. And because I'm a East Coast guy, I've never been to LA. I was like, okay, what do I do? Well, do what I'm most familiar with, go to open houses. But the good thing about that is I also learned about every neighborhood around LA, you know, going all the way from Venice to all the way east to, you know, like Pasadena and stuff like that. Oh, Pasadena is not part of LA, but
yeah.
Oh, you know what?
No, I got you.
The neighborhoods and stuff, learning about real estate by default, because I was trying to learn the lay of the land. Like, where am I? I'm this is a strange place, and you know, I want to learn more. And how do you learn more about a neighborhood or a town or a city?
You hit the road.
You hit the road.
Yeah, you walk
you
around
the pavement.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
That's fascinating. So now you know LA.
Yeah. So
now,
I knew LA, yeah. And when it came time for me to buy, I knew how much money I had. Where I could afford and whatnot. I ended up buying in West Hollywood because it just from all my sort of travels, open houses, it felt like the right neighborhood for me, the right neighborhood to buy in. And sure enough, the month after I bought, again, timing,
yeah.
The month after I bought, you know, like prices kept on rising all throughout LA, by the way. But in particular, in this West Hollywood niche, this West Hollywood pocket, the pocket of West Hollywood, in a pocket of West Hollywood, sorry, I started seeing the price just rise really, really astronomically.
Yep, that's a word.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah. English as the second language. Sometimes you don't know what you're saying. Yeah, and then 2 to 3 years later, I was like, you know, this is going crazy. I might as well.
And now
play
it's
the
a
game.
Now it's a career.
But you know, it only made sense if I can turn one house into two.
Right, right.
And
okay, that's good. That's very good advice. Like, so don't sort of count on this to make your bread unless you really did it right.
Yeah, and you know, nowadays, if I had done the same thing in 2018, I don't think I can turn one house into two.
Right,
you know,
right.
It was just timing.
Timing, luck. Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think timing and luck, it presents itself in front of you. And the other 50% is your perseverance, right? You're wanting to just, like, grab everything by the balls.
Yeah.
And go for it. Right?
So what's next? What are you working on next? Do you have anything in mind? Are you working with a client? What's next?
Well, I just finished with a client. We did a duplex in Echo Park. That was also a head-to-toe renovation. And I just invested in my next piece of property. It's a mid-century ranch built in 1951. So very mid-century.
Nice.
It's in this little neighborhood part of LA called El Sereno, which, by the way, if people are being priced out of, say, you know, Highland Park, Silver Lake, Los Feliz, Atwater Village, all these, you know, like already popped neighborhoods.
Yep.
I think
this
people
is the
should check out El Sereno.
This is the pioneer neighborhood.
That's right.
And I think
if you buy
should,
there, you can help drive up my own.
Suckers.
You know, like, I'm about to dive into another head-to-toe renovation, this one for myself. I'm also taking on clients. You know, for some reason, I don't have many Instagram followers, but for some
reason,
I got...
Well, let's work on that.
Yeah,
let's work on that. Yeah, what's your Instagram?
What is it? Oh, see, it's called Happy Glenn.
HappyGlen.
Yes.
At Instagram, and you will see some of Tony's work.
Yes.
And I will also
I like
be
posting the befores and afters.
Oh,
so
see, people love
that.
I think you're going to have fun on his Instagram. And I'm going to show you. Check out my Instagram right now, Agra27. Wait, if you follow me, you probably even know what my Instagram is already. Whatever. Check out my Instagram, too, to see some of these creative stories that Tony has forged. And by the way, if you're in the LA area and you're in the market for a restoration or new property,
or
you're looking for a good designer, DM Tony at Happy Glenn on Instagram.
And I was telling somebody the other day, they were like, what does your job entail as an interior designer? I was like, great question. I think 90% of my job is talk therapy. you know, everybody just wants to be heard. And everybody has sort of design ideas, I think. You know, like, again, it's a subjective thing. Everybody has ideas. You know, like, when you go to Thanksgiving and your, like, uncle is like, hey, I got a script.
Yeah, they hear you're
in, like, Hollywood or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, same thing. Everybody has ideas. But everybody just wants to be heard. And what I always say to my clients is, yeah, you know, 90% is talk therapy. I let you talk, and then I tell you what to do. No, that's not what I let you talk. And then I call it like sort of a blue sky period in our sort of working relationship where, you know, there's no good or bad. There just is. It's very Buddhist, I think.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So I say, you know, every idea is like a passing cloud. You know, it comes, it goes. Some of them linger. Sometimes it evaporates. But we acknowledge the clouds coming. We acknowledge the passing of them. We acknowledge it all. Because everybody wants to be heard, right? And then eventually the clouds either stay or they evaporate. And those are the ones that you sort of, you know, see like, oh, I see a muffin in there. Or, oh, I see a red sports car. You know, like the thing, there are the things that if they linger, they tell you, okay, there's something a little more to that, right? So we delve into that. Right? It's like therapy.
Well, I see nothing but blue skies for your future. Thank you for coming by on the show today, Tony. Again, check him out at Happy Glenn on Instagram. And I think you're going to see, I've seen these photos before. They're pretty spectacular. And I don't know, hire him. I think I'm going to have him decorate my apartment.
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know. Everyone have a good night. Bye-bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.